Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, folks, we're back, and just trying to connect with Tony again. I'm having a little difficulty with the computer here tonight, so apologize for the late start. We're going to cover pretty much my schedule for the week, and all sorts of stuff tonight. Tony, we got you.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, introduce yourself.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages, this is your favorite co-host, the Tornado Tony Conical.
Tonight we have a guest from the MMA circle. Again, we have a guest named Andreas Spang. They call him the Sweet Swede, because he's from Sweden. And I guess he's pretty sweet. I haven't seen him fight yet. I got a couple videos I got sent by him. Sat down and watched them yet, but from his record, he looks pretty good, and he's going to be on in the 8:30 hour. Talk more about that when we get to it. But he's been in Strikeforce, he's been in Ring of Fire, a couple other promotions, and he's a good fighter.
Ivan Drago was really Swedish.
Really? The actor or the... The actor who played him, you mean?
Yeah, the actor. I watched the documentary on the Rock movies and the making and the casting and the behind-the-scenes info of all six of them. It was on like A&E or something like a month or two ago, and they were showing Dolph Lundgren and they were talking to him and he was showing them like how he got cast and he was like 600 guys. Like up for the role, and he was just in the States doing the like study, like engineering or something, like MIT. So that's like ridiculously smart. And he just decided to do it on a whim, and he got picked for the role. And he said that the funniest part was there was a scene where he's fighting Apollo Creed. They show Apollo doing like the big elaborate entrance, and they show Dolph Lundgren to Ivan Drago. It's like, well, when we first raising into the ring, he's just looking at everything, and he was like supposed to be like awestruck and like overwhelmed by everything. He goes, that wasn't acting. He goes, I was a Swedish kid, 23 years old, and this is the first time I'm really seeing all those pageants in Vegas. He goes, those looks were real.
Yeah, kind of hard to fake, I guess. Anyway, Andre, 185-pounder, 7-1 is his record. He's fought for MFC as well as Strikeforce and Ring of Fire. His background is in wrestling, but he's also got some boxing and kickboxing. He has a 71% finishing rate, 2 knockouts, TKOs, and 3 submissions. We'll have him on at 8:30. Speaking of MMA news, a couple of interesting stories here. Joe Rogan apparently is basically told to tone down his commentary by the Fox people, I guess. There's a whole section of his radio show where he talked about it. Apparently, they were like whispering in his ear while he was trying to broadcast, telling him to tone it down. So that was kind of an interesting story. They're in the room, block their ears because there's enough.
Can you imagine how this podcast, how these conversations go? What if we had somebody in our ear, and every time we started
bringing up a certain conversation, like, we would cheese it with either the best of the whites stuff. Stop it. Stop it with that. All right?
Yeah, they just got into it. Can
back up on that.
And you know,
that's what it happens. You know, like, look, I've been doing the UFC for, you know, how long? Very rare does anybody say anything. But once we started going on Fox, the producer actually had to tell me in my ear, the Fox executives like, tell him to take it down. But the way I get excited about something, it's natural. And I'm pumping it up and I'm pumping it up. But I'm actually fired. Of course they didn't buy a kid. But these fucking dummy executives,
I'm not saying
the Fox ones. I'm saying pretty much a huge group of percentage of the group of people that is in the producer position, a lot of them think that they're creative.
I'm just going to guess, what everyone's going to be doing.
Exactly.
The most people are going
to
be doing.
You can't tell me how to deliver the way I deliver. I deliver, I've been doing it forever. You like it, really don't. Most people like it. If you don't, tough shit. If it doesn't sound like you fucking baseball guys, your basketball guys, it's not supposed to. You know? It's not. It's not supposed to. It's a different fucking sport, and this is the way I do it. If I was doing football, I probably wouldn't do this
first.
Yeah, you're lucky I don't curse. Well, I'm lucky I get the job. Really, I'm lucky, too. But the whole idea behind the going in and, like, saying, oh, we're going to fix all this and fix all that, like, that's what happens in movies.
Yeah.
That's what happens on TV shows. That's what happened. It would happen in this podcast.
You're good at hiring a lighting guy.
Yeah. If we brought in production people and we said, well, we're going to move the podcast to the studio and I'd like you to produce it. Take some of the strain away from me. You know, if you're having anything to say, just talk in my ear, man. Just say, hey, man, I think you better take this. Just change the subject. This is a bad subject. Could you imagine?
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine how fucking crazy we would go if someone, like, if there was an O'Brien moment and someone would go, hey, man, you guys got to stop that. You got to stay your
That's why I hate commercial breaks.
Right.
There's, like, podcasts that do commercial breaks. That's so stupid. It's like, I'd rather.
So that's Joe Rogan on the Joe Rogan Experience. He actually does that show with another comedian named Ari Shaffir, who I've seen a lot of. I actually saw this DVD a while back. It was all canceled shows, like shows that never made it to TV. And one of them was called The Amazing Racist. And Ari Shaffir is The Amazing Racist. And if you look up on YouTube, The Amazing Racist, you'll see all his videos. And my favorite one is when he goes to Home Depot in his pickup truck, and he's like, looks for the Mexicans, and he gets all these Mexicans to jump in the back, and there's like 10 of them. And then he drives them to the INS office and starts honking his horn, and they all scatter. So it was kind of funny. But Ari Shaffir also tours with him. I went to see Joe Rogan in Boston a couple of years ago, and Ari Shaffir was the opening act. So apparently they're good friends, and they do the radio show with another guy. Looks like his Twitter is @RedBand. I don't know who that is, but that was the other voice in that commentary there. But apparently Fox is a little bit Big Brotherish there with Joe Rogan telling him what to say. This doesn't surprise me. I mean, Joe got in trouble a while back for using the reference to a certain choke in MMA, calling it a rape choke, which is what it's referred to. You know, it's kind of tough to call it anything else, and that's what it's known as. But he got a little flack for that one. But other than that, I mean, he's always pretty good. And I remember one time I actually had a pretty popular article saying that Joe Rogan was leaving the UFC. Well, no, he actually wasn't, but I had heard this really strong rumor out of the rumor mill that he was he wasn't going to be doing the analysis at the April 20th, whatever year, UFC. And it turned out he was doing a special in honor of the 420 date, I guess. So it wasn't anything to do with this argument. But I guess basically what I had heard was that he had this real big blow-up with Dana White over his comments on an ESPN interview where he said Mark Cuban was a bad mofo. And he was talking about the whole deal with Affliction and Mark Cuban's HD fights one time. That was a whole promotion. Rogan was basically giving everybody else credit, not talking up the UFC enough. So I heard that really pissed Dana White off. But he's still there. He's still going to be there. It's hard to imagine somebody else doing the commentary. Other MMA news, the now really famous Ronda Rousey, who beat Miesha Tate in the last Strikeforce main event. She's going to be in the ESPN body issue. And that's, I think, sometime this fall it's going to come out. And something that a bunch of MMA stars have been involved in. Gina Carano, John Jones, and both Evangelista and Christian Santos. So I think a lot of guys, including me, are going to be looking forward to the Rousey hit. Which I don't think I'll get it, but I'll definitely see pictures. And so definitely something that is going to be good. Let's see what else we got. We also have a lot of boxing this weekend. Sure, you're going to be glued to the TV Friday, Saturday, and Sunday here.
Well, Friday, yes. Saturday, I'll be going somewhere to start this, but I don't have to go. I'll be checking some of it at my home. And Sunday, I will once again be in the Sunshine State.
All right. Well, Eric Morales is fighting Danny Garcia on that HBO Saturday card. James Kirkland.
I've been following him since his amateur days at Philadelphia. Good young prospect. Promoted by Golden Boy. He's a good puncher. Had a chance at the 2008 Olympics and lost in the trials because of that DPS scoring system. So he decided to sign with Golden Boy and start his pro career. And undefeated, he has a win over Kendall Hull, who I'll talk about his fight last week on ESPN. So, Garcia has really knocked some guys out. He's been increasing his level of opposition. Eric Morales, the old blowhard. It looked like he was a fitness picker. Two straight losses to Manny Pacquiao about 6-7 years ago, but he's come back pretty strong recently, and he's playing well. I mean, he's sort of wily guy.
Right, and Morales is 52-7, so he comes in with experience. Garcia is 22-0, so he comes in with the dominant record. As far as prospects go, anyway, that's pretty good. Knockout power, he's fast. He's Morales is coming basically coming back to the sport that he left almost retired from, so he hasn't really had any major challenges up until this fight in recent years, so it's going to be interesting. But also on this card we have a guy I've seen in action, Carlos Molina, who I saw in Vegas a couple times at the Cosmopolitan on those couple of ESPN cards. James Kirkland is going to be facing him. Kirkland's 30-1. Molina is. And one little blemish, they say, on his record recently, win streak that stretches all the way back to 2007. Is Arislandi Lara, which I thought he won that fight, and they just didn't give it to him. But he had a really strong showing, and both the fights that I saw him in were really good, especially watching him out on the pool deck there. He was intense. He was in the zone. Anyway, that should be a pretty good fight. I think Kirkland will beat him. But Molina's going to give him fits. He's one of those guys whose record just doesn't give him justice. Like they say, he's got a win streak back in 2007. So it's not going to be easy. It's going to be a tough fight for Kirkland. And we'll see. That's pretty much the HBO card, the two main fights there. We got also Saturday on NBC Sports from Brooklyn, New York. We got Zab Judah, who's 41-7, taking on Vernon Paris, who's also another undefeated fighter, 26-0. And Paris is pretty big for a welterweight. Zab Judah really hasn't done anything that's incredible recently.
Well, we have had that decent knockout loss to Amir Khan. And it seems like every time he really steps up, he really gets knocked down. Going back to when you saw Khan 10 years ago. Stepped up to play Cotto, stepped up to play Mayweather. Even when he was champ of the world and he was defending against a heavy underdog in Carlos Baldemar. He came up short. Stepped up against Amir Khan, came up short. That is your typical, as I always like to refer to him, as a front runner. If things are going great, he's unstoppable. When things get a little bit tough, he tends to fall apart. He always kind of reminds me of, like, the cocky bully in school that, will sit there and run his mouth and, intimidate people and make himself, look really cool. But then when things get tough, it's time to knuckle down a little bit. And when it's time to nut up or shut up, generally get the dick knocked in the dirt. No disrespect to the guy, but look at when he stepped up to play Tosh too. In the first round, he was kicking his ass. Do land a couple good right hands, next thing you know, put him flat on his ass, and then, shoot him into a childlike temper tantrum and he stopped the fight. The fight against Mayweather, he was doing great. He was beating Mayweather the first four rounds. And, Mayweather started to come back a little bit. He started falling apart. Next thing you know, he's hitting Mayweather with like 8 low blows, getting him to start a riot. It's just the type of mentality. As soon as things got tough against Khan, folded and tried to blame it on a low blow.
He's Mike Tyson.
Every time he says he's matured, he hasn't.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if he can handle Vernon Paris. That'll be big news if he beats him. We also have favorite there, Thomas Adamek, 44-2. He's keeping up his heavyweight appearances against a guy named Nagi Aguilera, 17-6. And the question is whether Adamek can knock him out on the way to a possible rematch with Chris Areola, a former guest of ours.
Yeah.
And that's not the only heavyweight fight on the card. We have a Philadelphia guy, Bryant Jennings, who's 12-0. You ever heard of that guy?
I've never heard of him. I just covered his last fight.
Oh, there you go. Well, he's taking up Sergey Ljakovich, who's 25-4.
You know what's funny about this? About 7 weeks ago when I went to that fight card out in Philadelphia that was on NBC Sports. The main event was supposed to be Sergey Ljakovich versus Fast Eddie Chambers, former world title challenger. About a week or so before the fight, Chambers breaks his rib, and what they ended up doing was pulling two undefeated heavyweights in there, Bryant Bye-Bye Jennings and former guest of ours, Maurice Freight Train Byram. And it was a nip-and-tuck fight. It was a close fight. Jennings was the crisper puncher, won a decision. I agreed with it. I believe he did win. It was a well-deserved victory. And now he is fighting the guy originally that was supposed to fight Eddie Chambers. So this is a very nice step up for Bryant Jennings. I wish him the best.
Yeah, definitely an interesting fight. That's a good three-fight lineup there for NBC Sports.
They're doing another one of those NBC sports cards, actually, again, not far from me, in the outskirts of Philadelphia, in the beginning of June. It's going to be in Bethlehem, PA, which is close to the Allentown area. And we're looking at a main event. Ronald Cruz, who's an undefeated prospect at junior welterweight, and the co-feature, which I'm very excited about when I heard about this one, is King Gabriel Rosado, who I just covered in his very impressive win about 2 months ago down in Philadelphia. He is fighting a very, very tough Colombian fighter by the name of Joel Julio, who I mean, like something like 37-4 with 33 knockouts. So, you know, he brings the heat. Rosado is a very aggressive power puncher. So there is almost impossible that this fight will not live up to fireworks.
Yeah, we'll see. It's definitely NBC card. It's really a lot better than what the ESPN Showbox have for Friday nights. We got Diego Magdaleno versus Eduardo Lozcano on Friday's Showbox in Tucson, Arizona. And Magdaleno's original opponent dropped out with a rib injury. And he's been replaced by Beltran Jr., 36-7-1. So it's not going to be Lozcano. It's going to be Beltran Jr. Magdaleno is 21-0. And is a southpaw junior lightweight prospect and contender. So that's the main event there. Then we have ESPN2 Friday Night Fights, Antoine Smith versus Roberto Garcia. Smith is 21-3-1. Garcia is 30-3. And Smith was on his way to becoming a proper upset artist before he got stopped by Leonardo Kiner in 2010 and dropped a decision to Kermit Cintron last August. Garcia is probably best known for being the guy with the decent record that Antonio Margarito pummeled in his first comeback fight after his suspension for illegal hand wraps. So it's not really a blockbuster Friday night there. But there's some other people. We got Enzo Macarinelli. Apparently given up on his light heavyweight experiments, but not his career. He's 34-5, and he's returning to cruiserweight to face Shane McPhilbin, 8-2, in Wolverhampton on Friday. I'm assuming that's got to be in the UK. Anyway, also Polish heavyweight Mariusz Wach, 26-0, takes on former prospect and contender Ty Fields, 49-4, in Atlantic City on Saturday in a show that's available as an integrated sports pay-per-view. We got welterweight Jan Zavec, who's 31-2, and gave Andre Berto a bit of a fight last year. He returns home to Slovenia to face Bethuel Ushoda, who's 25-1-1. That's also on Saturday. And then well-named Dominican junior welterweight fringe contender Victor Kao, 27-2, faces Nate Campbell, 34-9-1, in his home country on the same night. Campbell should retire. Also, Saturday, Gary Buckland, 24-2, defends his British featherweight title against Paul Truscott, 18-2, in a bout that TGBR's Andrew Harrison. The Queensberry Rules website is what it says, I guess. And Andrew Harrison will do a full write-up. Also, Hernan Marquez, 32-2, faces flyweight Rogel Mayo, 35-2. 30 wins, 5 losses, 2 draws. Mexico, on the same night. And one more fight, South Africa's Takalani Ndlovu, who's 33-6. Takes on hometown junior featherweight fight against Jeffrey Mathubula, 25-3-2. So a lot of boxing this week. And already late.
for a call to our grace, so let's get him on the phone. And we'll finish up the miscellaneous stories a little later.
Fights on ESPN last Friday night?
No, I did not.
Kevin Hall looked pretty damn good. He's fighting Tim Pitbull Coleman. You know, more of a club fighter, kind of on the downside of his career. They were kind of criticizing Coleman for not taking the fight seriously when he admitted that he decided to train himself for the fight and showed up without any cornermen.
Really?
Yeah, not exactly a good way to, you know, start it off. Holt dropped him in the first round with a very nice left hook to the body. And then second round, pretty much like Holt was just teeing off. Coleman was holding his hands up, and any time a punch, you know, hit him anywhere in his cranium area, he was just dropping like right down to his knees. He dropped him one time in the first, three times in the second. There was no three knockdown rule, and the referee had like no intention of stopping it. You know, hit the third knockdown in the second round, the referee was counting, he was going to let him continue. I think he was just watching, you know, enjoying watching Holt just, you know, take target practice. But whoever was working Coleman's corner sat up on the apron and threw the towel in. Obviously, I think they cared a little bit more about the fight than Coleman did.
I guess so. Alright, we're going to connect Andreas here.
I'm sorry, but the person you called has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet.
Great.
Goodbye.
Message. All right, we'll give him another 5 to 10 minutes here, and we'll get back to him. Speaking of last Friday night, there was a pretty interesting episode of The Ultimate Fighter. They had, I don't know the guy's names offhand, but that had control, it was a Gerard Faber's team, put out a guy against someone he thought he could beat. It was one of those situations where they try to set up the mismatch, and wasn't the strongest guy that the Uri picked for an opponent, but they got lucky. They were in the middle of the first round there, going back and forth. I think guy lost in a minute. And he got hit with a knee and knocked him clean out. He didn't even know what happened. And, so that was exciting. But the fights are live. It kind of makes me wonder. Because it's on FX, but they have other programming. So it made me wonder if they're so live, you know, how do they know that it's going to finish before the end of the show? Like, how do they know when to stop the video footage and go right to the live fight? And, you know, what if it goes an extra round? Because it's two rounds, those fights. They had one round just to get in the house, but now they have two rounds for these fights. So are they going to, you know, cut to the fight at the end, is it the last 10 minutes? And what happens if there's an overtime? You know, do they put a hold on the programming that's coming up next? It's going to be interesting to see if that happens. Somebody is going to come out and say, these aren't really live. We know they're on a tape delay. You know, that's obvious because of the blurs, the blanking out of the swear words, the first episode. But it kind of made me wonder, like, how they're going to handle that if it's time around. And how they knew exactly when to cut into this fight. It ended right on schedule. If it's really live, I mean, I just don't understand how that could happen. But maybe it's on a really long damn delay. They call it live, though. Anyway, we do have a couple other old tidbits of news. Interesting story from Oklahoma. Basically, they cut all boxing and MMA, boxing, wrestling, and cage fighting in Oklahoma because of threatened lawsuit. And I haven't got a chance to read this yet, but I saved it in my links so we can talk about it today. The Oklahoma State Athletic Commission temporarily suspended granting any new permits for boxing, professional wrestling, or mixed martial arts in the state because of threatened litigation by the UFC, believe it or not. In a March 5th letter to promoters in the state, Joe Miller, the executive director of the commission, said the commission will not grant any more permits or events scheduled after March 31st. However, bouts scheduled after March 31st that already have received permits from the commission can go on as scheduled. And the issue is a 4% fee charged to promoters for pay-per-view events shown in Oklahoma. The Oklahoma State Athletic Commission received 4% of the money that is paid by pay-per-view customers in Oklahoma to watch those fights. The cable providers collect the fee and forward the money to the Oklahoma State Athletic Commission. And the UFC, the largest promoter of mixed martial arts fights in the country, has threatened to sue the state if the fee is not revoked. The Oklahoma State Athletic Commission does not receive any appropriation from the state legislature and is funded entirely by license fees, 5% fee on gross ticket sales from live feeds in Oklahoma and the pay-per-view money. The commission earns about $240,000 from the pay-per-view events, which is about two-thirds of the commission's budget. So it's obviously going to be really tough for them to drop that. Facing the possible loss of those funds and the uncertainty of being able to pay fight inspectors, Miller said he decided to stop sanctioning future events until the legal issues are resolved. We could run out of money, he said, and looking for direction on which way we are going on this. And the state attorney general's office is studying the legality of the fee, said Miller, who also is meeting Monday with State Senator Clark Jolly, who introduced a bill that would appropriate money for the Oklahoma State Athletic Commission. And 4% is not really all that much. I mean, I don't understand why the UFC would be that pissed, but they would sue over that. But anyway, the bill has passed the state senate and is awaiting action in the house. If we think we can defend the lawsuit and win, of course, we wouldn't want the state appropriation, as I said. Last year, the Oklahoma State Athletic Commission sanctioned 280 professional boxing, wrestling, and mixed martial arts fights in the state. Even most of the bouts held in tribal casinos in Oklahoma are sanctioned by the state commission through the tribe's compact with the state. And there's 30 part-time inspectors whose job it is to ensure that fights are evenly matched, regulations are being followed, and doctors are present. They're waiting on advice from the Attorney General to see if they're going to sanction events again. So what else? January, the OKC charity Fight Night in Bricktown raised $91,000 for the Police Athletic League in a similar charity event in Allen Limbo because of this controversy. So, the UFC is bad for charity.
I told you that.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. I mean, the whole state is growing up. Obviously, they sued New York, but yeah, that kind of actually helped MMA because the lawsuit actually revealed that amateur MMA in the state is not banned. It's just professional MMA for some reason. So, you know, there's a loophole in the law. But now just a threatened suit against Oklahoma is throwing a monkey wrench and everything. All right, let's try the sweet, sweet one more time.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
The person you called is a voice mailbox that is.
All right, sweet, sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like we're not gonna be talking to him tonight. But what I'll do is I'll shoot an email to the PR guy who set this up. We'll see if we can figure something out here. You can text him or something. You can't text him while I'm on the phone.
Does lead with his head. and you always run the risk of you're basically having three gloves. Two on your fist and one uncovered one on your cranium. I was joking around with a Facebook friend of mine a few months ago when Bradley was set to fight Joel Casamayor. I was like, yeah, Bradley's going to win this fight, but I want the over-under to be on how many headbutts there's going to be. And I looked at like more like 231, and that's only by the third round. Just because they're both, two very head-first fighters. One trainer at my old gym kind of reminds me of Timothy Bradley. I used to hate to spar with him. We would only do, like, body work. So a lot of times we wouldn't wear headgears. It would get to the point where even if we were only hitting each other in the body, I would not spar him without headgear because he was always coming in and leading with his head. He is the guy that prompted me to get laser eye surgery because he headbutted me in the face when I had contact lenses in and swelled my eyes shut for about 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. Not good at all.
I have good vision now.
Well, we do have a couple other stories we can check out. Big Mike Tyson story. Mike Tyson, we talked about before when I went to Vegas and saw him sign autographs. One of the guys from the autograph company said it's one of the only ways he makes money these days. So, obviously he's not going to come back to boxing or try MMA or anything. He's a big fan of MMA. He's officially retired. He's going to stay retired, but he's kind of embracing show business. And there's this big article in USA Today about his one-man Vegas act. And basically he's going to get up there at the MGM Grand's Hollywood Theater, and there's going to be some video, but primarily, it's going to be him talking. And he's going to talk about a whole lot of stuff. It's going to be called The Undisputed Truth Live on Stage. And he's basically going to just discuss everything. Customato, Robin Givens, being in jail, time on the Hangover show or the movie.
Yeah.
And the article here, it says that that's really what really brought him out of obscurity. But I don't believe it. He was still big news even before he was in the Hangover, I think. But I guess that was sort of his comeback to the public eye in some sense, because he wouldn't even be recognized on the street out in Vegas sometimes before that movie, I guess, according to the article. And at one time, even though he grossed more than $300 million from 1985 to 2005, he had only $7,000 in his bank account in 2007. And,
sad thing is, it's not hard to believe. I remember when he first came out of prison, he was making $30 million a fight. Now, you look at his first four fights post-prison. Now, figure, I don't know if he got $30 million for the fight against McNeely, I'm not sure. But just say he got $15 million for that one. He was making $30 million a fight. So I'm going to say $15 for McNeely. And I'm being very conservative when I say that. So I'm sure he made closer to $30 million. McNeely? Buster Mathis Jr.
His biggest person.
It was McNeely, Buster Mathis Jr., Frank Bruno, and Bruce Seldon. That was a total of, say, potentially $100 million, is it? $100 million, $105 million. And he went 80-some seconds, three rounds, and like 80-some seconds. So basically, he fought a total of 9 rounds for $100 million. Those first four comeback fights.
Wow.
according to this article, $30 million was his biggest payday. And that was for his second fight with Evander Holyfield in 1997. After the hangover, the movie won a Golden Globe, and Tyson said, "It feels as if I won the heavyweight championship of the world again."
Huh.
And he also added that he was still withdrawing from cocaine when he was doing the movie. And he said, "As soon as I finished the film and got paid, I told my agent, this movie's going to stink." Then I came out of a restaurant, and a bunch of kids are asking me for an autograph. This was during a really down period of my life. Fans were scared to shoot me for a photograph from three blocks away, let alone get up close and personal. Tyson vows the 80-minute show will be raw, revealing, and poignant. He will appear in the same Vegas showroom that currently features a magician, David Copperfield. Tyson must conjure up his own illusion of sorts, convincing the public to pay $100 a ticket to gaze at what largely has been a disappearing act for years. And his wife, Kiki, is also collaborating on this effort with Hollywood playwright director Randy Johnson. Tyson's recent video spoof of former presidential candidate Herman Cain generated more than a million hits on funnierguy.com. So he definitely has some experience with acting.
Mike is, even going back to his, even before he first won the heavyweight championship of the world back in 86, Mike was always an extremely charismatic guy. And I think a lot of his charisma came in the fact that he just combined a lot of things. I mean, obviously his, very unique speaking style with kind of the high-pitched voice and then the backstory with it. I mean, he could have sold tickets by being a much less exciting fighter, to be honest. The fact that he was a whirlwind in there and, got people talking, obviously helped out his career a lot. But just the backstory, look at it, it's like, the kid in reform schools, and, he's not going to make anything. Some crazy old white trainer basically takes him out of reform school and moves him up into the New York mountains. And, he's knocking guys out. And then he turns pro and the trainer dies. This is like a movie, And he continues to fight on, in honor of his trainer. And then he's the youngest man to win the heavyweight championship of the world. And then, but everything was like, partly, you couldn't script something so good. And then the tumultuous title reign, the marriage of Robin Givens, the car accident, everything. You can't script shit that good. And just adding to the fact that he just had such a blockbuster personality, that sometimes he would say shit that was unintentionally hilarious. Sometimes you can't go wrong with that. That is the guy designed to make money. And then sometimes he would say something, like I said, unintentionally hilarious. My style is impetuous, my defense is impregnable. What the hell does impregnable mean? That sounds like a girl that can't get pregnant. I'm going to eat your children.
Yeah.
What if fools didn't have any children? so whatever. And when he beat Tyrell Biggs, when he was back in 87 during his first title reign, I made him scream like a woman in there. When he said that Ray Erotic, "You're sweet. I'm going to make you kiss me with them big lips."
You got the idea for this skit thing. Let's see, it's more of a skit, the show. From Chaz Palminteri. Does a stage version of A Bronx Tale out there in Vegas at the Venetian Hotel. And Tyson saw that show in 2010, and he says, "It was inspiring. I thought I could do that." And also, there's some interesting tidbits about his mother, Lorna Mae Tyson. And Curly Kilpatrick, who was a small-time New York pimp and gambler, who Lorna May told Mike was his biological father. But at 38, Tyson discovered to his dismay that his birth certificate listed Jamaican-born Purcell Tyson. And he said, "I desperately wanted to be the son of a pimp because that was a big status symbol in my neighborhood. Curly was a fast-talking and cool-dressing dude who changed the path of my mother's life. Before long, she was caught up in the street life. She drank to kill the pain. My mother was an addict. That's why I have this addictive personality. When I drank like she did. I get caught in the gunfire, collateral damage." I guess he also talks about Don King. "Everyone was scared of Don, including former champions Larry Holmes and Muhammad Ali. I said to King, 'What? They're scared of you? I used to whack him, pal.' When I look at him now, he looks like a pathetic old man. Nothing but creepy. He reminds me of someone that the devil is finished with." And finally, there's one more funny story before we give Sweet another try here. "Man, my life is sick," he says with a laugh. "I am a sick guy. Indeed, a few years ago, Tyson left an award ceremony in a drug and booze haze when police in Los Angeles stopped his vehicle. He says, 'I'm doing so much coke and alcohol, and they saw I was driving crazy. They tell me to pull over on the sidewalk. I'm so high that I drive on the sidewalk. Boom. The cops see it as Mike Tyson. They think it's awesome. I have the audacity to say, 'I'm going to a dope house. Do you know where this address is?' Next thing I know, they are leading me to the party. When we got there, the cops tell my friends, 'Make sure Mr. Tyson gets home okay.'" I guess it's good to be Mike. But he also says, "I'm really grateful for where I am in my life right now. I don't know if it's custom auto in me, but I always want more. I want more. Success and I have such a complex relationship."
I want to hear another great story that I read. Obviously, I read this long after it happened because the person in question died 7 years before I was born. But you heard of the fighter who's a former heavyweight champion of the world, Rocky Marciano, right?
Of course.
Not being sarcastic. Right before I started college, which was 1994, it was an article in Sports Illustrated on the 25th anniversary. Actually, the 25th anniversary of Rocky's death, 1994. And it had an article in there. It was about a 7-page article in Sports Illustrated. And they had interviewed his daughter in it. And, the daughter was talking and this and that. She was telling some stories. And I guess Rocky's mother-in-law, detested him for whatever reason. She was even talking bad about him after his death. But the one story that his daughter told in that article was Rocky would often just give her the keys to the car, and have her, drive. So one time, she's 13 years old, driving his car to pick him up from, the airport or wherever the hell he was, coming in from somewhere, and she gets pulled over by a cop. So the cop's she's a 13-year-old. Now, obviously, we're talking here in, the 1950s or 60s, so it's obviously not as strict as it would be today. With child welfare and endangerment and this and that. So the cop sees a 13-year-old driving a car, obviously no license, and he pulls her over, takes the keys from her, and he goes to the airport to get Rocky on his motorcycle. And they do half hour later, here comes the cop back, there's Rocky on the back of the motorcycle, shirt open, The cop, lets him off, asks for an autograph picture, and lets him go. And as the way his daughter Marianne said it was, he probably thought he was saving, us from some reckless 13-year-old, driving from menace on the road. He probably put me behind the wheel in the passenger seat with the world's worst driver. My father did not even have a license.
Oh, yeah, he was bad at driving.
But it's funny,
It's about him driving. I think somebody said he drove like a fox, straightforward,
full speed ahead.
Without abandon. You know, speaking of that, you know, a couple of years ago when I was at my old job, my one supervisor, and he's a nice guy, and he and I got along great, but he could bust your balls. And for a while, I didn't like him, you know, because, you know, I took everything he said seriously. And then when I really got to work with him, I'm like, you know what, he does it, but it's more to be funny, and I ended up really liking working with him, and we got along great. But he used to bust my son if I was ever late. I mean, if I was 1 minute late, he'd be like, you're 1 minute late. And everybody would be like, are you busting his balls every 1 minute? He'd be like, well, there's 250 work days in a year. I mean, basically, if he's 1 minute late every day, that is, you know, 4 hours of work that he's missing this year. And, you know, like, you know, busting my son. Well, for a while, you know, especially after I moved up to Harleyville and it was a longer ride, and I'm getting used to the traffic patterns, and I had like 45 minutes to get to work, but I'm really hustling trying to get down there. Well, I got out in fender benders almost two times. I got in them like literally within about 2 weeks apart. I slid on some snow and ice, and I kind of got my car into an embankment, like, you know, hit like a snow embankment from where it was plowed. And I got it out, and I had a little bit of damage in the fender, not much. 2 weeks later, I'm behind a guy, and he pulls out, he was going to pull out in the traffic, and I was going to pull out too, and he stopped, and I rear-ended him. And I'll never forget coming in that day, and this guy Frank looked at me and goes, Tony, you're not boxing. He goes, you're driving to work. Please do not treat it as you did a fight, like a demolition derby. You are driving to work. You know, do not. And he goes, I like that people call you the Tornado. It's a great nickname for you. It's a great fight nickname. It is not a great driving nickname.
There you go. Well, we're going to try Andreas. Apparently, he's got to be ready for us this time.
Okay.
I'm sorry. But the person you called has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet.
Man.
Goodbye.
See you later.
I just got an email and call him now.
I'm dead.
Hello? Andreas?
Yes.
How's it going?
How you doing?
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited, and we're also on the line with Tony the Tornado Pacquiao.
Hey, how you doing?
So tell us a little bit about what you got going on these days.
I'm getting ready to fight some now in May. We haven't had the set date yet, but it looks like it's going to fire at the SEC. It's a pretty good up and coming organization here in Vegas, and I'm very excited to fight for them and work with them. Actually, some good people behind them and some good backers, so I'm very excited.
Cool. And how did you get into this sport in the first place?
I came into MMA.
I was
dreaming about being a boxer. And I was trying to be a boxer for a long time, and I just had bad luck with fights, and I broke my hand, and just a lot of things came up that I never really got my boxing career going. And my buddy at the time was doing MMA, and I went down to his gym, trained with him, and the switch was pretty natural, and I did my pro debut a couple months later.
Cool. Tony was actually saying earlier that another Swedish guy, Dolph Lundgren, was this most famous boxers out there, even though he never really boxed. He did really box a couple of times.
Yeah, Dolph Lundgren is his action hero. But he actually was a pretty tough karate guy. And he did some I know that he did a knockdown karate style, old school, like some Kumite, bare knuckle kickboxing fights. And he had, before he was a movie star, he actually did have a little bit of reputation as a tough guy in Stockholm, in Sweden. He's from the same city as me, Stockholm. He's a little bit older than me, so I didn't really have the chance to hang out with him or anything like that. But I know he actually did have a martial arts background that was legit.
Mm-hmm. But he's not a machine.
Well, that's the one thing they said about Dolph Lundgren. They said, he got a part in Rocky IV, just kind of by accident. He was in the States. I think he was going to, like, MIT for chemical engineering or something like that. And he decided to go to the audition. And they said, even Sylvester Stallone said it. I was watching a documentary about a month ago that he was, Dolph Lundgren was so bull strong that they were working out together and they were doing some of the rehearsals for the fight scene for the movie. He said Dolph hit him so hard in the chest that he actually, like, moved over Stallone's rib cage or something like that and caused his heart to swell and put him in intensive care for a week.
You know, his heart was probably swelling from something else, I would guess. But Dolph Lundgren was a really big guy, and he was going to one of the best business schools in Sweden. So he actually is an intelligent, smart guy. I know that also. So, but he's a really big boy. I remember I was bouncing back in Stockholm, Sweden, probably 10 years ago, and he came and he was standing in line, and he was two heads taller than everybody else, you know. So
yeah,
it was very hard to recognize him.
Now you're out in Vegas. How do you like it out there? It's obviously a lot of gyms and training opportunities, right?
Yeah, you know, I love Vegas. Vegas has been my home now for 6-7 years. You know, 5 years ago I met my wife and we had a son. We got married 2008 and we had a son to the day also. So I have my family. I have my brother here in training right now. I'm actually coaching him right now. He's sparring, boxing. And I love Vegas. It's my second home. You know, Sweden and Stockholm and will always be my home, but Vegas is definitely my second home. I can't see myself moving out of Vegas anytime soon.
Yeah, I was out there myself for between last February and this past November. So.
Okay. Yeah, you know, when you don't get caught up in the gambling and the nightlife too much, it is actually a very nice place to live. And everything is cheap, everything is close, and if you want to have a good night out, it's not very hard to find.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't really gamble that much when I was out there. I played Jack a couple times, but I won money both times, so I'm never somebody that has a problem.
You know, I have the worst gambling luck ever. Every time I try to gamble, I always lose money. So luckily, it never really got down to me because I always lose my money.
I think blackjack has the best odds because both times I played it was just so easy to win. You know, you just get in a streak. It depends.
Okay.
On, yeah, but you know, I try to go to the $5 or $10 minimum table. So. You don't spend an hour. You can just chip away at it.
That's fun.
Get back to your fight career. You just were on Strikeforce Challengers 20 back in November. What was that like to that level?
Oh, that was awesome. I got to fight on kind of short notice, like 3 weeks, but that's been like four or five minutes, you know, 2-3 week notice. But I got a 3 week notice and I'm very excited about the fight, and they switched opponents on me a couple of times, but I was in shape, I was training, I was ready for anything. I'm not really one of those guys who's studying my opponents. I was trying to concentrate on doing my thing, and as long as I'm good on what I'm good at, I will be fine. So that was very exciting, and, you know, I definitely saw changed level in the production, and no, it was awesome. It was a really good experience, and I can't wait to get back to SUFA again.
Have you had any offers or calls on that front at all?
We have some connections, and we have some relationship with SUFA. They're ready.
Well, they love exciting fighters. It's like you don't like to go the full distance. So, and looking at your record, according to Sherdog, anyway, they're not always right, but it shows you only got to decision twice in 9 fights.
Yeah, that decision sucks, man. I want to finish it fast and go home and eat ice cream.
Yeah, every other fight was first round. That's it.
Yeah. I don't really like to. I have all of my first round fights is I have my coach Skipper Kelp in my corner, and he's kind of like my lucky charm. Every time he have nothing in my corner, I gone to the decision, but every time he never seen me for a second round yet, so I try to keep him in my corner as much as possible.
There you go. Definitely a good situation to have going for
you. Yeah, definitely.
But is there anybody out there you really want to fight in your weight class right now?
My number one guy I want to fight is Vitor Belfort. I don't really like him. That's my goal. Before my career is over, I would like to have the chance to fight Vitor Belfort. I do not like him. I would also like
personal. What's the history?
Yeah, you know, I've seen him around here in Vegas, and he's not as nice as people think he is. You know, he puts out this. You know, he's the God's. You know, whatever, but he's not really that nice that people think he is.
No.
And of course, another guy I would like to fight also is Derek Brunson. He called me out on the same show. He fought on the same show, and I guess I beat his friend or whatever to call me out. And so I would, I'm up for the challenge.
Cool. And who out there do you really like to watch every time they fight? Do you have any favorite fighters, or you try to watch everybody?
I'm a fan of the sport. You know, boxing would always stay closest to my heart, so I try to watch every big boxing fight, definitely. And, you know, my wife is Filipino, so Manny Pacquiao is somebody we never miss, of course. And somebody I like also is Anderson Silva. I like to watch his fight and his attitude here.
I guess I don't have to ask you who you'd be rooting for in a Pacquiao versus Mayweather fight.
I would love to see that fight. You know, I was always a Pacquiao supporter, and I was always saying a Pacquiao will smash Mayweather, but then. Before I went to Mayweather's gym, before he fought Victor Ortiz, and I saw him sparring. His sparring is on another level. It was very impressive. I never really get too impressed with people, but when Mayweather was sparring, that was something else. He had a couple of different opponents that he was switching out in the same round. And he was going like 7-8 minute rounds, and he was switching off people in the same round. So that was pretty impressive when Mayweather was sparring. So right now I'm a little bit, I don't know, I can't really give up on people with Pacquiao, but Mayweather is something else, definitely.
Yeah, it's a coincidentally. I was in the same gym, probably different time. I didn't see him spar, but I saw him do the media open workout before the Ortiz fight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He definitely looked good. I was more impressed with watching the Shane Mosley fight because for the first time, I think, in that fight, he really threw out the defense. Like he was moving forward more often. And that's scary to see him do that because you know, anybody can come in
know, put them, put on a defensive fight and win if they've got the skill. But once you start really putting on the attack like he did, and you have the defense when you need it, it's tough to beat a guy like that.
Yeah, you know, and then what impressed me the most in all in the whole fight was when he had really bad in the second round, and when he came back between rounds, between the second and third, his corner or him didn't even acknowledge that he got hurt and nothing. They were just continuing talking like they were winning and do the same thing, and he did. In the third round, he came out and he dominated from third round to the 12th, you know. So he's something else. And see, he's very professional. When outside of the ring, he's doing his whatever, but inside of the ring, when he fights, he's so professional and that's very impressive, I think, and it's something to look up to also as a fellow professional fighter.
So you said your son is boxing now. Is that something that's going to turn into something serious? Is it already serious? Is he going to be fulfilling your original dream or what?
My son can do whatever he likes, but it's definitely fun that he comes with me to the gym every day, and he has fun. He has his gloves on. He do everything. So I would love for my son to do whatever makes him happy. But fight business might not be my first choice. I would rather have him do team sports or something like that. Something that not as damaging on yourself.
Well, it depends, you know. There's more and more talk about the football injuries there, the concussions and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. No, there's no joke.
It's more dangerous than sports, ironically.
Yeah, no.
When I was wrestling in high school, my coach used to always put out the statistics about how many injuries per year there are in high school football and basketball compared to wrestling. And it's really a lot less in wrestling, even though you're trying to tear each other's arms off.
Yeah. I think that any time you get to that level, the elite level of professional sports, I think it's going to be damaging to your body, whatever you do. And I think it's going to be, you know, your body going to take the abuse, whatever sport you choose to do. But of course, contact sports is always more damaging. But and the thing, you know, the track and field guys, they don't, you know, they blow out the knees, they blow out, you know, they don't feel good either. So I think when you get to that level, the abuse you give your body, you're training every day, you're training 2 or 3 times a day, and the diets and everything, that is rough.
And tell us what your ultimate goal is in the sport. Where would you like to
take over the world? Take over the world. No. Of course, I would like to be champion. My goal is to be the UFC middleweight champion. And after that, I would like to challenge somebody big. Alistair Overeem. That would be nice. Have a title fight with Alistair Overeem. That would be fun.
You gonna bump up to heavyweight?
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome. Do a super fight in heavyweight. That would be.
You have to do a few steroids.
Yeah, exactly. You know, no, that would be awesome. I saw Dana White this weekend, and I said, you know, I beat up all your middleweights. Just give me a chance. So I'm ready. I'm motivated and I definitely think you have what it takes to do some damage in the division.
Right. Cool. And is there anything you do outside the sport for a hobby or anything like that, or charitable efforts, anything big that's not fight-related?
I'm as big as a family man. You know, I love my family. Every time I get, or every second that's not involving my training. I try to spend as much time as possible with my wife and my son. They always support me, they always behind me, so I try to hang out with them as much as possible. And one of my biggest sins is eating ice cream. So that's what I like. That's what I like to do. I like to sit home, watch a movie with my family, eat ice cream. That's my happy place.
As long as you work it off, no big deal, right?
Yeah.
Actually, I read somewhere there was a baseball player. I can't think of his name offhand. He's a Dominican baseball player, and there was an article about him how before every game he used to just like eat ice cream bars one after another in the clubhouse.
I try to restrain myself from sugar 3 weeks before a fight, 2 to 3 weeks before a fight. I'm a pretty heavy guy from the beginning, so I need to lose my weight, but also to not feel like sugar sluggish or like a sugar hangover. Because when I eat ice cream, I have a tendency to go out of control.
Ice cream high.
Yeah, I go. I like that's one of the things I love in Vegas. Also, this all the hotel buffets. I rank all the buffets out of how good ice cream they have, not that good food they have.
Yeah. Well, Vegas is king of the buffets.
Oh yeah.
That one guy, the fat guy, there, Louis Anderson. He's always at all the buffets. He's got to eat a lot, so he goes to the all-you-can-eat place.
I eat a little food, not a lot of stuff, and then I go and snack to the dessert and ice cream. I go, usually the dessert, the people that work with dessert, they ask me because I come over and back and back and back, and also... I'm a fat guy. Inside of me lives a fat guy.
Well, you'll definitely make heavy weight if you keep that habit up.
Yep, for sure.
What would you say you enjoy most about being an MMA fighter?
Excuse me, can I hear you?
What would you say you like most about being an MMA fighter?
Like we've been with the... I'm not only going to do one thing. I have so many things to do, and it makes it fun, especially when you're drained and you're tired and you do your third training in the same day. It's not the same thing over and over again. I go and do jiu-jitsu in the morning. I go and do boxing afternoon, and at night I maybe go for a run or go and lift weights. It's so many things that you have to master to be a good MMA fighter, and I think that's make it fun. The learning that you learn new things all the time. And I think that's important also in life. To learn new things and to evolve as a person.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. Once you become a well-rounded fighter. People respect that, number one. You can do a lot of other things because you're disciplined, number one, and because, everybody likes to hire a tough guy.
Yeah.
It's definitely something that the boxing has got to help you out on, because one thing I noticed is in MMA across the board, there are very few really good boxers that can throw the hands. And even though it has evolved so much, I don't know how long you followed it, but since I first started watching in about 2006, I've really noticed it's become way more of a striker's game. And I think it's a combination of the UFC's attitude towards giving bonuses and stuff for fight of the night and knockout of the night, and also the fans, because you got the fans that started out in the sport booing every time it went to the ground. They don't so much do that anymore, but they definitely prefer the striking to the ground still to this day. And they'll let you know about it when you're in there fighting and going toe-to-toe with somebody.
Yeah.
Does it help you a lot to have that boxing background?
I think that also, you know, the boxing, a little bit of the boxing mentality, because I think that whatever people say, I think that still boxing is the toughest sport. I think, definitely think that the background of waking up early and going for a run and, you know, or the hard sparring definitely helped me out in my MMA career. And it's always good to also, good to have something to fall back on when times get hard. And unfortunately, times get hard sometimes.
So have you gone across to actually take boxing matches?
Excuse me?
Since you started MMA, have you done boxing matches too on the side? Or?
No, I haven't. I've been offered a couple times and they've been tempting, but I still want to build my MMA record and you know, get to another level in MMA before I start doing both. And I would like maybe do a couple of fights after my MMA career is over. I definitely would like to. I haven't given up my boxing dream yet.
Well, if you want to go in the UFC, then you better get your boxing out of you soon, because they don't like it. When you go to sports, I think Rampage about it. Obviously, Nick Diaz made a big stink fighting Jeff Lacy. Sherdog is different. I mean, not Sherdog. Strikeforce. They still have the open contracts, but UFC.
You know, I keep myself. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. I take care of myself. I feel that if I want to, I can fight as long as I want to. You know, and Brandon Hopkins, what is he now, 46, and he's one of the best in the world.
Yeah.
Pound for pound. You know, and Lana Cachorro was 46, 47 also. So I mean. It's always time if you want to. It's always time if you. It's never too late. People say it's too late to do this and too late. People are too old, but it's only in your mind, you know.
Right.
If you're still young, you're young.
Yeah, and it's you know, there's no real American-based heavier guys that are champions there in boxing. So,
I know that's too bad.
If you get into it, I think you definitely get a lot of interest.
Yeah, I would like that. I like the interest. I like the impression to me.
In the perfect place, Vegas. I mean, all you'd have to do is yell out your window, you find somebody set up a fight for you.
Yeah. You know, my brother did he's actually planning on doing a boxing fight now next month, and his last fight was in Strikeforce also. And I sparred with pro boxers, and that's mostly where my sparring is going, is boxing. When I do kickboxing, I do just very light. You know, it's easy to get injured when you do actually do kickboxing. So I stick to boxing when I spar.
And as far as your next fight goes, do you have any idea who you're going to be fighting?
I have a couple of ideas, and it will be some known guys, and I'm excited, you know, to get somebody with a little name, with a little record, and I'm definitely excited to knock them out also.
Awesome. As far as the money goes, how do you like the pay? It's obviously a lot better than it was when MMA first began. It was on the fringes, but do you think it's getting better these days?
Oh, yeah, definitely getting better, you know. And for me, you know, I haven't really got to that point yet, so I make a lot, but I definitely, for every fight I fight, I make more money, which is nice. And And for the top guys, they make so much money. I know a lot of people, you know, they complain and, you know, whatever, but of course you always want more, but you have to also see, you know, if you have a good living and you do what you like, that should be enough, you know. Right. There's so many people that go and do a job that I hate every day and every week and every month and every year, you know, and we have the courage to be professional athlete, and I think you should be happy. If you can take care of yourself and your family, I think that should be enough.
Yeah, they have that phrase, starving artist.
Yeah, yep.
They're not always starving by choice, you know. It's,
yeah.
You know, you gotta pursue the dream, so you gotta starve yourself sometimes to do what you love.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's what it is sometimes, you know, unfortunately.
Well, is there anybody you want to give a shout out to or say hello to before we let you go tonight?
You know, all my trainers that helped me, Skipper Kelp, One Kick Nick, Sergio Pena, Michael Waters, and new to my team, but I think he works the hardest right now is Ricky Velasquez for Phenom Fighting, and I'm happy and grateful for all those guys that, you know, try to make me better every day and try to push my career forward, and to all my friends, family, fans, I love you all, you know, without everybody around me, I wouldn't be able to do it.
Awesome. Well, it's been great chatting with you, and we definitely appreciate it, and we'll definitely keep an eye out on you. And I know you'll be back in Strike Force one of these days, or UFC, if you can. So we'll see you on the big stage. And
hopefully sooner than later.
Yeah, right. And keep up that trend of keeping it for one round only. You'll be all set.
That's my goal. That's definitely my plan. Thank you so much for having me and giving me a chance to talk about what I do.
No problem. It's been our pleasure, and we definitely wish you the best of luck there, whoever you fight next, and in your career.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Talk to you soon.
All right.
Okay.
Bye. So there you have it, Andreas Spahn, the sweet Swede, and a pretty down-to-earth guy, loves Vegas, loves to fight, so... What more can you ask for in a guest? And seeing if he talked so much about boxing, I'm surprised he didn't butt in, Tony.
No, I was listening, you know, some of the stuff that he was talking about, and I had some, some points in there. Obviously, I'm a little bit of a sore throat, so I had a little trouble talking at some points.
That's okay.
Two days before vacation, I'm sick as a dog.
That's not good. I haven't really been sick, but I had this issue this last few days where I go to sleep and my hand goes to sleep with me. And it's not cool when you wake up and your whole hand is numb 2 days in a row.
Not good at all.
Especially when, you know, you hear all these stories about, you know, that's how a heart attack first starts, is your arm tingles. So, I mean, I'm in shape now. I'm working every day, doing logging and stuff in the backyard here, so... I don't think that's the issue, but I don't know what the hell's going on there. Still, it's like, it takes the entire day to get most of the feeling back in the hand. And I remember one time when I was working for the newspaper here in town, an old reporter in his 60s kept telling me that I was going to get carpal tunnel syndrome because he was watching the way I work. So I'm hoping it's not something like that, but it's kind of making me think I need to get back to boxing. Start hitting the bag again, because that will get the feeling back in the hands and probably prevent that.
Yeah. You know, get a little bit of the tingle back going at least.
Yeah. So maybe the next couple of days I'll have to go out there and hit the bag for a couple hours. And right out in the garage now, you know, I should be doing it more anyway. So I've got an excuse now for my health in more ways than one. Out there and do it. But anyway, Let's just do a little rundown of the mixed martial arts fights coming up this weekend, and then we'll call it a night. We don't have any big other stories to talk about at this point. We got, of course, Bellator has got another event coming up tomorrow night, Bellator Fighting Championship 62 from Laredo, Texas. We got Super Fight Australia 13 also tomorrow in Perth, Western Australia. And we got, Ken Kanpah versus Yamaguchi. And that's also tomorrow at PP11, whatever PP stands for, I don't know. And that's in Finland. I don't even know how to pronounce the exact place in Finland, but it's in Finland. Right next door to our former, our guest tonight's former home in Sweden. Bama 9, TBA. That's the title of the fight. TBA. I don't even have a title of the event. It's from Birmingham, West Midlands, England. That's on Saturday. Battle of the Cage. Battle in the Cage is also on Saturday. It's put on by GCF. And that's in the Czech Republic on Saturday. It's like nothing here in the United States except this Bellator thing. Let's see. We got one fight in California. Anyway, we also have a fight in Dublin, Ireland on Saturday. Battle Zone Fighting Championship 5. DDT in Brazil, which just sounds kind of a funny name here. Duelo de Titas. Battle of the Tits. I don't know. Anyway, Romania also. We have then Romania on Saturday. Middleweight tournament opening rounds put on by EMS. We got Ronic Ultimate Fighting Federation 3 from Chongqing, China on Saturday. And finally, get to California, the Explode Fight Series Disarm is going on in California. Hard Rock MMA 46 in Bowling Green, Kentucky on Saturday. Strength and Honor Championship in Geneva, Switzerland Saturday. Supremacy Fighting Championship 9 in Henderson, Auckland, New Zealand. Road FC 7 Recharged in Seoul, South Korea. These are still on Saturday. A couple more on Saturday. West Cage Combat Challenge 19 in Akron, Ohio. Annihilation 39 in Fort Collins, Colorado. And on Sunday, Nagoya Impact Kabuto Fight. Put on by Deep in Nagoya, Aichi, Japan. That's it until next Friday when we have Bellator Championship 63 from the old Mohegan Sun Arena in Connecticut. So I think that's all we got for tonight. We're ending a little early here, about 20 minutes early. So thanks for stopping by. Obviously, we like to thank our sponsors, drinkcocaine.com, marijuanamuscle.com. It's a product sponsor of ours. Check out our website, fightnewsunlimited.com. It's a new blog. We've been using that for a little while now. We're going to keep going on that. And check us out next week. We're going to have another special guest next week. And what's going on with the guest that you talked about last week?
Well, I sent a message to Hank Lundy. I did not hear back from him. Getting him for next Thursday is going to be doubtful. That's the night for the fight. I also put a text message out to Kevin Burwell yesterday, my old...
Yeah. We lose you? What happened? Don't pay. Pasta.
Actually, it's the voice now. When you hear the beep, do what you gotta do.
At the tone, please record your message. When you
hey, my phone was dying, so I had to turn it back on to plug it in.
All right. Well, let's reconnect to say goodbye anyway. So you were saying about Burwell?
Yeah, I sent him a text message yesterday asking him to be on as a guest. I also had one of our old South Philly sparring sessions, the VHS tape of it, so I am going to be, when I get home, converting that to a DVD and uploading it on YouTube. You guys can all see me what I looked like when I was 19. And this was actually about a week before a fight, so it wasn't a hard, hard sparring session. It was more sharpening things up, having fun. The goal at the time was really getting me to relax in there and have fun. So that's what this is all dedicated to, and I think you guys will enjoy it when I get it uploaded.
Cool. We'll put it on the blogs for sure.
Hey, I was just watching the Flyers game. I think I saw George W. Bush in the audience.
Really?
Yeah. Drinking a beer.
Yeah, he should be. Anyway. All right, so till next week, I guess. I know we have, I think we have one guest already lined up. I'm not sure offhand who it is right now, but I think we do have one person lined up already. But I also put a shout out to Reggie Johnson. Out. He's definitely out of jail. And talking on Facebook a little bit. And apparently there's a big scandal going on down there in the Houston correctional system. So it's going to be like Law and Order talking. And I still have yet to find out the exact circumstances of how we got out and why and all that. So it's definitely going to be interesting to reconnect with him. I haven't actually been on Facebook in like a week, so I don't even know if he's replied yet. I'm sure he has, but I just have been so busy doing other things that kind of let the computer stuff slide for a while. But we'll see if we can get him on one of these days, maybe in early April, if not next week. And we'll see what else we can get together before then. We'll have another show. Every week. Bye.
All right.
So thanks for stopping by, and have a good night, everybody. And Andreas Spang, good guest. Adios. Over and out.
Later.